You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to The Political Fix for this Wednesday, August the 6th, 2014. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay Amernick is a strategic planner who helps clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he also serves as the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their businesses into the U.S. He also has a development lab that creates smartphone apps and other inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and internet marketer who has a degree in philosophy, of all things. His political development is called The Solution, and that solution, as he will explain, is to cap and prioritize. I'm Heather Vail, known as The Unwrapper. I'm a freelance interviewer and journalist in all media, TV, radio, print, and online. Hey, guys, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. So, Rick, where are you this week? Seems like you're traveling all over the place.
I'm still on vacation, so this week I am in Muskegon, Michigan. It was the nearest Starbucks. It was 36 miles from our cabin. So.
Wow.
The nearest Starbucks was 36 miles away.
No, but he's in a cabin.
Okay, well, yeah.
That makes sense. He was in the, you know, hinterlands and then had to come back to society.
Yeah, come back to civilization. Yeah, exactly. It sounds like Gilligan's Island.
I'm so far away from normal society that I cannot get cable TV. We cannot get DSL. Our only internet access would be by a satellite, which wouldn't allow this video to happen and so on. So, I had to travel 36 miles to Starbucks.
Wow. That's like it's like a trip back through time.
Yeah, exactly.
It really is.
Jay, how's your week been going?
It's going good. I by surprise last week, I ended up with a free pass to the Sage Summit, which is a sort of technology company thing here in Las Vegas, and so it put me a little bit behind because I spent all week there. But it was a very good experience, and then met some interesting people and made some good contacts, and saw Neon Trees live for goodness sakes at the closing party. It was a nice surprise.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Well, last Friday night, I covered the concert, which featured the Goo Goo Dolls, Daughtry, and the Plain White Tees. So that was pretty cool. And I got to photograph them as well from the front. So,
oh, good.
That was fun. And then this Friday, it's the, what do they call it? Under the Sun Tour. It's Mark McGrath's band, and I keep glitching on the name.
Sugar Ray.
Yes, Sugar Ray, Smash Mouth, who I actually saw play in January here as well. So Smash Mouth again. And I actually have to call the lead singer after we get off here because I'm trying to set up an interview with him.
Oh, cool.
So Sugar Ray, Smash Mouth, Uncle Cracker, and Blues Traveler are all playing together at the Golden Nugget of all places, if you can believe that.
Oh, I know Blues Traveler's manager.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Hook me up. Maybe I can get an interview with them too.
Okay.
All right. So, Rick. Let's talk about the solution. Mm-hmm. It's your political development you've come up with. You say it's to cap and prioritize. Now, what exactly does that mean?
Well, what we're capping is government spending. And then what we're prioritizing is
government spending.
Government spending, yep. And the idea is that the political right is absolutely correct when they say government spending is out of control and we need to have some caps. Otherwise, Congress will keep spending more than they have. It makes sense. But a cap alone is not politically viable. It never has been. And so to make the cap politically viable and sustainable, that's where step two comes in, which is to take the spending that's left and actually prioritize it, rank it from top to bottom. So all the most important stuff is on top and all the waste, fraud, and abuse is on the bottom. And there's ways of doing that. And the reason to do it is that this transparency, the transparency of a published prioritized budget, is going to force government to help the people who need help most and help them in ways that help them the most. And that is the pursuit of social justice. Only this time it's happening within right-leaning limits. And so this unites the values of the left and right under one government reform And that's why social justice will become possible. And that's why the cap will become sustainable. And we can all live happily ever after. Cap and prioritize.
So cap and prioritize, it's the adult version of a fairy tale.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, happily ever after.
I have two meetings. But,
yeah.
it is the mature form of government, I think, is the right way of saying that.
Okay.
That's true. Yeah.
All right. And you think people are going to get on board with this?
Well, it'll happen slowly. It happens through conversations like this. Yeah, it can even actually happen by accident because let's say we get to a point where it becomes clear that we really do need to cap spending and the Republicans get enough of a majority to make that happen. And they've come close a couple times in our lifetime. Once government spending is capped, what can we do except fight over priorities? So we're going to end up here one way or another. We can, you know, I think our goal here is to help make it happen sooner and smoother by understanding it before it happens, as opposed to understanding it after it happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Jay.
I was going to say that, you know, it's interesting because that, you know, to me that first key step is it's the most difficult because it requires so much trust. It's almost like it has to be laid out all on paper first before it'll happen. Because it reminds me, it's like two kids, you know, in a tug of war over a toy, and the, you know, the parent comes in and says, you know, well, you know, we'll figure it out. And the one kid's, I'm not going to let go till he lets go, and I'm not going to let go till he lets go.
Yeah.
So it's.
Yeah, I think a better example, also involving kids, might be the old idea that if you want two kids to share a piece of cake, first you have one kid cut the cake, and the other kid chooses which side he gets. That's a structural way of kind of, aligning all the incentives. Basically, the person who's cutting the cake now is incentivized to cut it as fairly as they can. And if they don't, it's their own darn fault. And so they don't blame the other kid. It's almost the same thing here, where we have to kind of agree on the structural fix. We have to agree on the idea that some kind of cap is needed, and we're not argue about what the cap is, but it almost doesn't matter. As soon as we agree on the cap, then we can start agreeing, start writing about how well to spend instead of how much to spend.
And, right. Well, the challenge is that both sides have been down a similar path before, but they've been so foolish as to not sort of lay the whole game plan out on paper. So. What needs to happen, like a great example is they've voted in the past for, you know, raising the debt limit, but they've never put anything in there that says, okay, but we're going to have something in there. Once we've raised it, then we're going to sit down and hunker down and figure out how not to make this happen again. And what happens is that the Republicans end up getting screwed with it because it just keeps going up and up and up. So it needs to be laid out on paper, I think, first, where all parties trust, like I swear to God, like a peace treaty. You know, where they all get together and all sides, everything's laid out, and this is going to happen first, and then this is going to happen next. No ends, ifs, or buts about it.
Yeah, it's almost like we have to solve all of the problems before we can solve any of the problems. and so no one's come along until now, and until this program, and really said, okay, here's how it can all work together. Right now, in Congress, you have the political right having to respect their base and what their base wants, which is just the tight caps. And then you have the political left who is trying to say, hey, let's help people, let's help people, let's help people. And the place where we end up is where we do both. We have tight caps, and then within those caps, we help people as best we can by prioritizing. And so I agree with you. We have to think of this all down in one image, in one story, so that we, the people, can say, you know what, this makes sense. Let's do it. And so it's going to happen in the public first. You know, we, the people, are going to have this enlightenment, and then the politicians will follow us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to hear you say you agree with Jay, because that doesn't usually come out of your mouth.
Oh, yeah, no. I think we agree on most things, but
yeah.
I think I'm a little bit more optimistic about the power of this solution to influence a wide range of things than Jay is, perhaps, especially overseas. And every now and then I'll mail Jay on some detail that I think is different. But I think Jay and I mostly agree, right?
The funny thing is, yeah. we have a comment on last week's show on YouTube, the YouTube version, and the comment simply says, "I agree with Jay."
Yes, thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm gonna give you guys the top story. It kind of ties in with what you're saying about spreading the word about new political solutions, for lack of a better word. And yet, you know, we always talk about how long is it going to take and stuff like that. And obviously everyone who is in politics thinks that their way is the way, or else they wouldn't be in politics and they wouldn't be passionate about it. So the top story this week is out of Washington. You can now add Kansas to the list of states where Tea Partiers tried and failed to knock out Republican Senate incumbents. Next up, Tennessee, and the odds are getting tougher for the upstarts. In a bitter, closely fought primary, three-term Senator Pat Roberts edged out Tea Party favorite Milton Wolf yesterday. Wolf's a radiologist and also a distant cousin of President Barack Obama. Roberts overcame questions about his Washington area home, his Kansas rental for official residency, and his quip that he goes home when he gets an opponent. The Senate GOP establishment, which got burned in 2010 and 2012 when Tea Partiers and outsiders cost the majority control, is now basking in a solid string of wins. And those include Texas, Kentucky, South Carolina, and Mississippi. But it did take six-term Senator Thad Cochran two tries there before defeating Chris McDaniel, who is challenging the outcome now. Establishment Republicans are confident about tomorrow's primary in Tennessee, where they expect two-term Senator Lamar Alexander to turn back a challenge from State Representative Joe Carr. 3 months to Election Day, and the GOP is increasingly optimistic about gaining the six seats that it needs to seize control of the Senate, and they're no longer worried that candidates will stumble in the general election who are not ready for prime time. Now, the primaries yesterday in Kansas, Michigan, Missouri, and Washington State launched a crowded stretch that continued with Tennessee tomorrow, Hawaii on Saturday, and Connecticut, Minnesota, and Wisconsin next week. The 78-year-old Roberts, who is a conservative, moved even farther right as he faced a tough re-election. The senator had backed the nomination of former Governor Kathleen Sebelius to be Secretary of Health and Human Services, and yet he was one of the first ones to call for her resignation after the disastrous launch of the healthcare website last October. Roberts also voted against a UN treaty on the rights of the disabled in December 2012, despite the appeals of former Kansas Senator Bob Dole, who sat in a wheelchair in the well of the Senate. Wolf argued that Roberts had spent too much time in Washington and wasn't a true conservative. Wolf publicly disavowed the policies of his cousin Obama, especially on health care, and he had the backing of the Senate Conservatives Fund and several Tea Party groups. But Wolf couldn't overcome the ramifications of having posted x-rays of gunshot victims on a Facebook page with humorous comments. He acknowledged that he made a mistake and he apologized, but Roberts made it an issue in campaign ads, which is something that Jay was talking about a couple of weeks ago. So there you go. There's the top story. That's, you know, the establishment continues marching on. What do you think, Jay?
I mean, you have to sort of take these things, you know, race by race. That, you know, you mentioned Lamar Alexander and Thad Cochran, who are both, I don't want to say the word beloved, but they are strongly liked in their
respected,
respected, liked in their constituencies, and actually are, you know, both of them are pretty much, I would call them, you know, on the more moderate side of the Republican Party, and they're very effective, and they're well liked in Washington by the other side as well. That's the thing that nobody ever sees, is that there's actually great friendships amongst members of Congress from the party's opposite, and you don't see that because it doesn't make for a good photo op, but it's the truth. So, in general, I think people are a little tired of I'm going to call it sort of the fragmented. You can't even call it an organization. The fragmented nature of the quote unquote Tea Party. It's not really even a party because you have all these different names and these different organizations, and some stand for this and some stand for that. So I don't think people really know what it means anymore. And they're also seeing that the Tea Partiers that have been elected to Congress are not so effective. I would say outside of Rand Paul.
Okay, so we can call it a movement instead of a party, but then that puts it right on the same level as this Cap and Prioritize. It's a movement.
Yes, but we are starting out. First of all, it is. There's not a constitution per se. There's not a, you know, there's more of a party platform, okay? And there's no real party platform for the quote-unquote Tea Party. It's just sort of, because some are more on the libertarian side, you know, who say legalize pot, and some are just like ultra conservatives who, you know, are anti, you know, legalizing marijuana, anti-gay marriage, anti-abortion, all these other things, and they're just sort of the more disenfranchised members of the Republican Party who don't like that the Republican Party moves closer to the center.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to get Rick's thoughts on this top story when we come back from the break. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be right back with you on the Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vale, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Rick Raddatz and Jay Amernick. Before the break, we were talking about the top story, which is the GOP against Tea Partiers. And basically, the old establishment seems to be winning out this time around. So we got Jay's opinion on that, and we did not hear from Rick, but I'm curious what Rick has to say about the top story.
Sure. Well, My opinion is that the Tea Party has already won the battle because everyone on the Republican establishment is being forced to go more right than they would otherwise. And so even if they lose the primary, they have still won the war, in a sense, for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. So you know, from the very beginning, the Tea Party was all about not splitting from the establishment party. It was all about fighting within the Republican Party to push it more to the conservative side, to the limited government side. And so it has largely achieved that goal. And whenever a movement achieves its goals, it kind of fades away or becomes different and lesser because it doesn't have the energy that it did before. So now I will also say that war within the party is a very small comparison to the larger war, which is between the parties. And so The Tea Party has not achieved its larger aim of actually getting government to become more conservative. Government continues to do what it's always done, which is to hide taxes and hide regulations and play games of favorites and power plays and all that kind of stuff. And so that's all still going on. And the Tea Party honestly doesn't have a plan for winning that war, and I believe it's because they only have half the answer. They're absolutely right that we have to limit government, like we said before. You know, we need a cap of some kind, but they stop there. They're like the dog that catches the car and says, "Now what do I do?" Right? That old joke. And what I believe the Tea Party needs to recognize, this would be like the Tea Party 2.0 platform, is that once you cap government, all you can do is fight about priorities. So why not add that into the message? Why not talk about cap and prioritize as your main proposal, so that you can get all the benefits of prioritizing into your message? So you can talk about how prioritizing will help people need help most, and help the ideas that help people most win the battle, so that results actually matter. Any conservative is already for cap and prioritize, again, because what can you do but prioritize once you have the cap? They just haven't added it into their messaging, and that's why they fail. That's why they lose the war. That's why they also lose these primaries, because the bulk of the Republican Party understands that a one-sided, you know, just limit government kind of message cannot win in the general election in most cases. Even Ronald Reagan, who is kind of like the high watermark of conservatism in our lifetime, he had a message that resonated with people on the political left, that the blue-collar Republicans, they call them. And that was because he softened the message. And that's what we have to do again, but in a way that has more lasting impact. And that's what CAP and Prioritize is all about.
They consider blue-collar Republicans to be left?
Well, it was the Reagan Democrats was the official term for it. But basically, yeah. There are all kinds of different people in that group. But if you wanted to like take out one main segment of that, there would be the blue collar workers that then became Republican because they were the Reagan Democrats.
Right, and a great many of them were actually union members. And part of Ronald Reagan's message was the exact opposite of Jimmy Carter's. With Jimmy Carter's, paraphrase was sort of it was the famous malaise speech. It was expect less. America's not as great as you think. And all this, and Ronald Reagan came in and said, "BS. This is the United States of America. This is still the American century, and we're standing tall." And those guys all of a sudden felt proud again, and voted for Ronald Reagan, which is why Jimmy Carter got trounced in that re-election.
Yeah, the 1980 version of Hope and Change was Reagan's Morning
in
America.
That's right.
Same idea, Hope and Change. But this time there was the Republicans that were on the outside, so they were flying under that banner. And a couple decades later, Obama uses it because they're out of power. And pretty soon it'll be Republicans' turn for Hope and Change too. But it'll be called something a little bit different, maybe Real Hope, Wing. Real Change, or
It'll be a wing and a prayer.
It'll be Captain Prioritize.
Oh, okay. So, does anyone know if we were to divide the American population and say this proportion of the population would be considered left-wing and this percentage would be considered right-wing, where does that division lie? What's the balance?
It's actually
I'll go first and then I'll tell them those are wrong.
Okay. If you look at any Gallup poll on this, and Gallup does polling on this almost. God, it's got to be like either weekly or monthly.
Okay.
The country is about between 51 and 53% what would be considered center right. Okay, so that is that's just a hair right then, but still well in the center. So most Americans are quite reasonable. It's the issue is that you have the fringes on both sides who are swinging the needle.
Okay, if that's the case, why does the media, mass media, as in broadcast media, tend to sway left?
Because that is who got into the business and owns it.
Okay, I thought they were catering to the majority of their audience.
No, not at all. No, as a matter of fact, the big three, the networks are ratings wise with their news are not doing very well. And then also catering to the left would be MSNBC, which, if you look at their ratings, you could joke that they have actually more letters in their name than they do viewers. CNN still has more reach because their reach is global. But ratings-wise, probably more people are watching Fox or have stopped getting their news. Or, the real tragedy is actually most Americans under the age of 35 get their news from The Daily Show, which is quite horrifying because it's not news and,
Okay, but that's extreme left, so.
35 and down, the majority of 35 and under get their news from The Daily Show, which is really terrifying.
So people in that demographic are predominantly left-wing?
Because
that shows as left as you can get.
Yeah, I would quote Winston Churchill who said, show me a young man who's a socialist and I'll show you a young man who's without a heart, and show me an old man who's a socialist, and I'll show you an old man without a brain.
Yeah.
So it's you know, yeah, maybe they're young and rambunctious, and that's why they like it. But it's the more they watch The Daily Show and think they're getting the news, the more misinformed they actually are, because his comedy is based on decontextualizing everything and making a smart-ass comment about it, which is easy to do, but it's not news and it's not accurate.
Right. Yeah. We won't call that objective reporting.
I wouldn't call it reporting at all. It's entertainment. And so would he, but that's where they're getting their news.
Yeah. Okay. So Rick, you said you were going to let Jay talk and then tell him he's wrong. So
tell me I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, he's kind of wrong. He's kind of right, but I thought he was going to go someplace else where he didn't go, but a poll after poll says that like 40% of Americans are conservative and 20% are liberal and like 30% are moderate, something like that. And then there's like little bits of numbers that all adds up to 100, of course. But the truth is that more liberals think they're moderate than conservatives think they're moderate. And that's because a lot of people are in the middle where they are fiscally conservative and socially progressive. And so they count themselves as moderate, but I'm going to say the country is really split half and half, where half are more focused on the need for limits on government and half are more focused on the needs to help people. And in the middle of that bell curve is a lot of people who want both but don't know how to get it and feel like they have to vote for one side or the other. They do. In terms of the what was the last thing we were just talking about?
We were talking about the top story.
What?
And we were talking about media. We were talking about
the media. Yeah. You were asking a question about, like, why is the media so left if the country is really fairly balanced? And the answer is simple. The left-leaning cause, again, is about helping people who need help most. And so there are certain professions that lend themselves towards helping others as a kind of a primary experience in that profession. And that includes government work of all kinds, journalism, healthcare, and various charity work. And so these are professions where the employees and the funders and it's not pure. There's a mix. There's a bell curve. But by and large, the political left-leaning people of the world dominate those industries. And Republicans often pride themselves in saying, hey, we give more to charity as in terms of money than Democrats. Yeah, but you aren't dedicating your life to, the Peace Corps, like a left-leaning person might. And so there's actually, a reason why these professions are left-leaning. Now, that doesn't mean that they have the answer. The pursuit of social justice is different than the achievement of it. And so if you pursue it directly by trying to help people, you can help people on a small scale, of course, directly. But if you want government to help people, it has to be within limits, or you're just going to spend more and spend wastefully. You need to start spending less and spending better, and that's what Cap and Prioritize is all about. So it's going to be, and also it's interesting that political right has dominated talk radio and has for like 20, 30 years. Yeah. And the reason why is that right-leaning dialogue between a host and their listeners is actually more conducive to radio than it is to TV. And TV is all about little sound bites going out. And that leads itself to left-leaning messages. Dialogue and debate is something where it works for the political right. And so it's more about the medium than it is about the division in the country.
The media is the message. That's fascinating. I've never heard anyone say that before, but that's very true. All right, so we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Jay's inside perspective as well as continuation of this discussion. If you want to join in with us and have your say, give us a call at 1-888-627-6008, 888-627-6008, and we'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And before the break, we were talking about media primarily and the way that media is skewed. Does either of you have anything to wrap up that conversation before we move on to Jay's segment?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Rick and put just a finer point on it. You know, the idea of the soundbite being more conducive to the left's message, it's because in general it's easier to sort of decontextualize and do a quick sting and to say, you know, again, Paul Ryan pushing the old woman off the cliff. You know, with that, which is pure nonsense. To say that he doesn't care about old people is just ridiculous. But you can decontextualize it and say because the left sets up and says because he's not for this piece of legislation, which we believe is the answer, then he clearly hates old people. End of discussion. There's no other solution than this.
Okay, so are you saying that only the left wing decontextualizes?
No. I'm saying they have an easier time of it.
Okay.
Yeah, if someone says, hey, we want to help people, and look, here's someone who needs help, that's a very easy message to get across in a soundbite or otherwise. If someone wants to say, hey, we need a new structure of government where we're spending is capped, but then within those caps we prioritize, that's actually a very difficult message.
Okay.
It's a solution, but it's also it's more complicated. And and people are busy, they'd rather go watch the rerun of The Simpsons than listen to a 10-minute speech on political theory. And so it's going to take a while for the real solution to come down the pike. But that's the fight we got to have.
Yeah. Right. Because when the left's answer is throw money at it, take money from rich people and throw money at it, that resonates. Okay, when it's Paul Ryan getting up there and it's nuanced and it's sophisticated and it's wonky, first of all, it's not particularly entertaining. It's not particularly funny, and there's no soundbite out of it.
Yeah. Media is all about soundbites. So.
Well, I would suggest
TV.
TV is because you've got to move, whereas radio gives you more.
Well, radio news is about soundbites.
Right.
But yeah, radio talk shows, of course, like this, we can ramble on forever.
Yes. Well, or at least an hour.
Yeah.
At a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Which this actually sort of ties into my inside perspective today.
Okay, well, let's do the inside perspective. This is Jay's segment where he talks about the insider view on politics. So inside perspective with Jay Amernick, here we go.
Okay, and I'm going to talk about feel-good legislation. And it is... It is not just a waste of the people's money; it's actually a waste of time as well. And both parties are guilty of this. And it's the equivalent of the I Love Puppies Act of 2014. Okay, it has nothing to do with puppies. It has nothing to do with anything. It's something else, right? But some guy votes against it because he actually read it. And what happens is they rail on him. He hates puppies because he voted against the I Love Puppies Act. That's one version of it. The other version of it is something that is completely that doesn't do anything. It doesn't move the needle at all. It doesn't solve the issue. But it feels good. It feels good to vote for it. And it's something like we're opposed to bullying. Well, congratulations. It's who's not except for bullies. So all you've done there is wasted time and money to pass this. Stupid piece of legislation, which probably has some pork barrel spending in it. That was hidden in there just so it would get passed. And I am for efficient legislation that's as simple as possible. Again, there's no such thing as a perfect piece of legislation. It's all unwieldy. It's all bulky because it has to be because the language has to be deliberate. But I'm for something that actually does something. And I'm not opposed to examining programs of government that do not work. And I'm not saying throw them out. A great example would be the Department of Education. How do we make it more effective? Right now, it's not effective. It's a huge money suck. And we haven't moved the needle on test scores in this country. In the 40 years, are we? Yeah, about 40 years. The Department of close to the Department of Education, and we haven't solved anything with it. So I think I'm not for, you know, abandoning it, but I'm for examining it and saying what could we do that works.
Yeah.
So that okay. is my inside perspective, is do not be afraid to examine things and beware of feel good legislation that doesn't really do anything, but it sounds good.
Okay. Rick, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think Jay is completely wrong.
Of course you do.
you're pro feel good legislation?
Yeah, what's the alternative? Feel bad legislation? No. I think Jay, what Jay is missing. Jay, I want to encourage you to finish your inside perspective with a connection to CAP and prioritize, because you're right about everything you said, except that it doesn't matter. It's like complaining about the rain. Okay, well, the rain is part of nature. It's what's going to happen on its own. There's nothing you can do about it. Nothing. Okay? And so, yeah, fielding legislation is worthless or whatever, but it's a symptom of the structure we have right now, and there's nothing we can do about it. It's exactly what we can predict will happen because of all the incentives. And so the solution isn't to say, hey, let's have better legislation. The solution is to cap and prioritize governance when results actually matter, and that's where legislation will start to get better. So I agree with Jay and what he said, but I didn't see the connection in the completion of the storyline.
Okay.
Like, it was a great setup, and we need to finish it with and so we need to cap and prioritize.
Well, that's
okay.
Your job.
Well, that's just, that's your job.
But obviously, yes, when there's fewer resources for government, they're going to say, okay, there's, you know, we don't have time for good ideas. We only have time for great ideas. And then the discussion becomes more serious. Yeah. The debate and the fight becomes fiercer to get your concept heard. And there's going to be less time for the ridiculous, which is good.
Well, that is prioritizing, because if we take
exactly.
out the ridiculous.
Right, but again, to Rick's point, the way to take out the ridiculous, the way to prioritize, is to give you less choices money wise. If the government has less cash to work with, they're obviously going to have to.
Right,
they will literally have no choice.
Well, to be real precise, though, it's not just about having limited cash. That's the first step. But you also have to have a prioritized budget so that the transparency of ranking all the spending from top to bottom makes sure the people who need help most get the help they need. So that's the second part that
right. And in an effective way, it needs to be examined constantly, not the way things work now, where a government agency has their mission. And they go through the year, and they probably didn't accomplish it, but what they say is, well, we need more money to do it. And that's what the Department of Education does. That's what it's just throw money at it, and it'll solve it, which is not really the case. I mean, it's a matter of working smarter, not harder. And that's something
we can disagree about what the cap should be.
But I agree with you that. That capping it obviously is going to make them examine what actually works, and it's also a matter of it's broken right now, because the way it works is it's use it or lose it. If an agency doesn't use its budget, so that's why at the end of the year there's a spending spree, and then they rebudget things and they ask for 20% more, even though they only spent 80% of what they were supposed to spend. Just because it's either in a government agency, it's either you're green and growing or you're ripe and rotting, and they don't want to be ripe and rotting because they got a sweet gig going.
Mm-hmm.
So that needs to change as well.
Yeah, exactly. So we on the left and right, we can all disagree about what the cap should be, but until we start arguing about how to spend better, we're going to be stuck spending, arguing about how much to spend. We got to get past this how much question and into how well question. Because at some point, we can't spend more. We got to start spending better. And
right.
That's what Capital Prioritize is all about. Yeah. Okay.
So we do actually agree.
Well,
I was just being funny. Yeah. We agree. I just wanted to see you take it all the way and kill it.
Okay.
You know?
Well, I thought that's what you do, but I'll do that. All right.
Yeah, I thought that's what Rick does too. Anyway, the thing is, though, people are going to be arguing about both. They're going to be arguing about how much to cap. They're going to be arguing about what to prioritize. So, you know, it sounds like a simple solution, but there are just so many parameters once you get into it that.
Well, you know what, Heather? That's actually an indication that we're onto something, because the solution to these big problems is almost always simple in concept, but then difficult to implement. So it may not be proof that it's the right solution, but we should expect the solution to have those characteristics. Just some good examples. Capitalism is very simple in concept, property rights in the free market, but very difficult to implement. Democracy is very simple in concept, elections and free speech, very difficult to implement. Diplomacy and national defense, very simple in concept, very difficult to implement. So, you know, now we're talking about how we spend government money. Cap and prioritize, very simple in concept, very difficult to implement. And I say that because sometimes when you hear these good ideas that are difficult to implement, you assume that it's out of our reach, it's impossible to make happen. Well, no, we made capitalism happen, we made democracy happen, we made national defense and diplomacy happen. This is just the next thing we've got to make happen, and it will happen. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have our outside perspective, which we call Rick's Rant. So that'll be coming right up in a few minutes when we're back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, we were talking about Jay Amernick's inside perspective segment. And now we're going to move on to the outside perspective. Jay has experience working within governments. That's why we call it the inside perspective. Rick has no experience working in government. He's just got a lot of good ideas. So we call this the outside perspective. And here we go with Rick's rant. Take it away.
Okay. My rant today actually ties into what we just talked about, which is I am sick and tired of hearing people complain about things that couldn't be any other way. I mean, you know, the example just before was complaining about feel-good legislation. And, you know, that's a starting point. Yeah. You know, a lot of what Congress does is just absolutely worthless or even backward. But they're doing exactly what they're incentivized to do. So if you don't like how government works, if you don't like how the world works, and you want to fix it, you got to stop being mad at the things that are happening for a reason, and you have to start looking for why they're happening, and you got to look deep. And ultimately what it comes down to is incentive reform. That's what it's all about. We have to fix the incentives in government. We have to have a structure of government that rewards good ideas. Because right now, common sense is a joke in Washington. Good ideas are a joke. Good ideas go to Washington to die. That's the joke right there. And so we are trapped in this false belief that if there's a good idea out there, it's not going to happen. And the better the idea, the more likely it's not going to happen. So I was talking to some people this weekend with about cap and prioritize. And I finally got them to the point where they understood it, and they liked it and said, yes, I agree, that is the right solution for government. And this, one of the people was on the right, one of these people was on the left, two separate conversations. And then both of them had the same complaint separately, that good idea, but it'll never happen, because you'll never get the other side to agree. I wish those two people could have been a part of the same conversation, because maybe then they could see that it will happen, because this speaks to the left, because it's all about the pursuit of social justice. It speaks to the right, because it's all about limited government. And we just have to get past this idea that good ideas can't happen, because, you know, good ideas eventually do happen. We might lose every battle, but we win the war. So my rant today is against people who complain about the obvious, and it's in favor of people who are willing to to stick the neck out and keep fighting for a good idea because it is the right thing.
Okay. Jay, I think he took a couple of little digs at you there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, he did. Well, I'm going to put a slightly finer point on it. I don't think we need good ideas. I think we need great ideas. I don't think we have time for good ideas. I think we need to up it a bit.
Good ideas are a dime a dozen.
Yeah, great ideas are fewer and far between, and I think that's what we need. And I think obviously Captain Prioritize is a great idea. So I just wanted to put that finer
point
on it.
Jay. I think Jay is absolutely right.
There we go. Now we're talking.
So when you have these discussions with people, Rick, what are their initial, what do they balk at? What do they say is the problem with it when you first present it?
Well, you know, everyone has their own pet project or view of the world or whatever, the thing they're most concerned about or a thing that they think is the root problem. So when you talk to someone on the political left, they might be absolutely certain that the political right is full of haters or racists or the protecting the rich, and the rich have, you know, they dominate in the money, in the power and influence that the money brings, and therefore the rich are the problem. And so, you know, people start with their worldview, and there's no way around that. And so different people need different discussions, and they have different questions to be answered for them to get to the aha moment. And the aha moment is, again, different for every person, but if you're on the political left, the aha moment is that Cap and Prioritize is a structure that weeds the greed and foolishness out of government, leaving a wise, benevolent government. And the aha moment for the political right is aha. The pursuit of social justice within limits is what makes limits politically viable. you know, limits won't be politically viable unless what's left of government spending after the limits is helping people who need help most. So different people need different paths to the aha moment. And then I keep running into this roadblock, which is what the half of the rant was about today, which is they then conclude that it's a good idea and then conclude that it can't happen because good ideas don't matter. And I agree with what they said, that we need great ideas, but what we really need is we need a structure of government where great ideas are rewarded, where great ideas have political capital simply because they're great ideas and the results are proven. And right now we have a system where power matters more than results. We have a system where, you know, pretending to care is more important than delivering good results. And so, you know, we get what we deserve. But we need to stop. We need to let go of all of our things we think we know and start over. We almost have to rethink everything and start with a really basic premise that, you know, government resources exist. They need to be capped and prioritized so that we use them as best we can. And after that happens, then we can start debating about the details. But right now, the details will just get in the way of your understanding. We just need to realize just how simple this is and the fact that we're not doing it and then start doing it. Cap and prioritize.
Okay. Thoughts, Jay?
I think there, you know, in general, there needs to be a big paradigm shift in the vox populi.
Paradigm shifts don't happen.
Okay. Well, because here's part of the problem is that people like bright and shiny things.
Yes.
And what happens is, again, this goes back to the feel-good legislation, and to clarify, I wasn't complaining about it. I was telling people to beware of it. It was a guideline, not a complaint. I was simply stating it as matter of fact. Okay. But people need to get past that concept of because politicians use it to demonize each other. He didn't vote for this. She didn't vote for this. You know, he's for dismantling the Department of Education. So he doesn't want to educate children. No, of course he wants to educate children. He wants to do it in a more effective way. Again, it goes back to what Rick's saying. He wants a great idea. Right now, the Department of Education doesn't have anything that even qualifies as a good idea. So the discussion needs to be very real, but it's not a fun discussion. It's easier to demonize somebody and say, well, you know, he was for tax breaks for the rich, so obviously he doesn't care about poor people. Like, well, there's no that doesn't make any sense. That's assuming that there's, you know, that somehow, okay, so if a rich guy makes money, that a poor guy can't make money. That's just nonsense. But that's the argument that, again, right now the left makes in order to divide and conquer, basically. So people need to sort of get more involved, be a little bit more aware, and look at what actually works. Look at actual numbers and statistics, which is boring, as opposed to the, again, I Love Puppies Act of 2014.
Okay, so why are people going to be incentivized to do the boring work and look at all the stats and numbers when they can just feel good about puppies?
Because it's effective.
About human nature, Jay.
That's why I said there needs to be a shift.
That's not going to happen. People are going to be sharing the cute kitten videos on Facebook.
And you can still do that, but don't say you're sharing the cute kitten video, and because of that, the Department of Education works. And anybody who wants against it.
Jay. Heather set you up with a softball, and you blew it. The answer to Heather's question, why will people finally care about the
Because of cap and prioritize.
After Captain Prioritize, they will.
Because they will have to.
So we the people have to stop caring about all the details. We have to stop worrying about who we vote for. We have to start worrying about one thing: cap and prioritize. Or if you want to count it as two things. But we need to focus on this cap and prioritize reform and nothing else. That is the beginning and the end of this era. This is our generation's challenge, the cap and prioritize government, so that government finally cares about what actually works.
How about if we get some of the politicians to focus on capping and we get the other ones to focus on prioritizing?
That might be the way it happens. I do own a website called prioritizespending.com and .org. I haven't used it yet, but I have thought that maybe the way to go about spreading the word about this idea is to forget about the cap, just focus on the prioritizing first, and then we'll think it up later on. I don't know. In fact, even the conservative Senator Mike Lee from Utah. I was talking to him about this idea a couple of years ago, and that was his first inclination is treat it as two separate things. Just, he already talks about the need to cap spending. Let's separately talk about the need to prioritize spending, and maybe the two will meet in the middle.
I don't even think that this is not going on. Is the government not capping spending? I mean, it's not an unlimited coffers that they have. There is a cap. And they do prioritize because they don't just throw their money at everything that comes along. So capping and prioritizing is going on right now.
No, it's really not.
No. Well, I see where Heather's going. It's true that we don't spend $20 trillion. But right now, the cap on spending is when moderate lefties think we're spending too much, then we really are spending too much because then they start voting Republican. But their pain threshold is a little bit too high because, government is always running at, 2-3% above it, what it takes in or worse. So we need a cap that is a little bit like 2-3% tighter than we would otherwise be. But you're right. There is a cap somewhere in there. It's just a little bit too high. And in terms of prioritizing, we do fight about priorities. That's all Congress does is fight about priorities, really. It's just that the fight isn't transparent enough. They argue about priorities in the back rooms, and then they use rhetoric on TV. We need a published, prioritized budget, and that can be achieved mainly through delegation. Congress can delegate to the Pentagon the prioritizing of defense spending, and they can delegate to the states the prioritizing of social spending within each state. That would be a very easy way of getting these budgets prioritized. And there's all the difference in the world between arguing about priority and actually prioritizing.
Final thoughts, Jay?
No, I mean, I'm agreeing with Rick on this one.
You're agreeing with Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay, well, no, I do want to say one thing. This actually does tie into sort of what we talked about at the beginning of the show. Again, I agree with him in theory. Again, it goes back to that trust, so it can't really be two separate pieces. It has to be one comprehensive thing, which is a little big, it's yeah. a little unwieldy, it's a little obtuse, but it has to be that, because the other side's not going to trust the other side if they say, okay, well, we're going to cap, and then we'll pass something that says prioritize. There's no way the Dems are going to go for that, and there's no way the Republicans are going to go for.
But if the right is saying we'll take care of capping, and the left is saying cool, we'll take care of prioritizing, why not?
But because it needs to be one comprehensive piece of legislation that everybody votes on. Because what can happen is, okay, so the Dems, so first step we agree is capping, right? So all the Dems say, yeah, we're into this. We'll vote for this if you guys vote for this. They vote for the capping. And then the prioritizing piece of legislation comes around, and the Dems say, no, you know what? We've decided we're not going to vote for that.
Okay.
Yeah, there's an example in political history of agreeing to the spending agreeing to tax increase now for spending cuts later, when the spending cuts never happen, the tax goes up right away. So this is kind of the reverse. If the right's going to get the caps they want right away, they're going to have to agree to prioritizing structurally so that it actually happens.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree with you on that.
That's why it needs to be one. They take we count to three, and we're Bush and Sundance, you know, jumping off the cliff at the same time, but in a good way. We have a parachute in this case. It's not, you know.
Cool. Okay, so this is a conversation we can continue next week. We're out of time right now, but if you're listening, check out politicalfixradio.com. You'll see our archives there, both the videos and the audio. Have a great week. On behalf of myself, Jay Amernick, and Rick Raddatz, we'll talk to you next week on The Political Fix. Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Valgoss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.